The sky above the podcast was the color of a radio station tuned to a dead channel. Welcome to the Jack Mangan Deadpan Podcast. I am your host, Jack Mangan, a.k.a. Leisure Suit Larry. And no, I haven't beaten this a.k.a. joke into the ground yet. We have a full show today with a long interview with Scott Sigler and lots of other segments, including more requested rap hip-hop lines. So stick around. Karen?
Okay, everybody. Everybody? Seeing as how I got your attention now, poor Pastor Kavanaugh is still recovering from his run-in with that very varmint we aim to hunt down today. We have to catch him before this happens to some other poor innocent citizen. Boys, bring the pastor up.
Woo!
Well, you can see for yourselves what this evil desperado is capable of. As secretary of this here town, I deputize all of you listening to go out and find Deadpan Jack Mangan and bring him to justice. He can usually be found around that Far Point Media place. So you just go down there to the Central Cortex, sign on, and make sure you go and listen to his podcast very carefully. There's a reward of 500 credits for the person who finds his whereabouts. Now, who's brave enough to go out and ride with me?
I am no coward, no way, no how, no way gonna be right now, no way Delaware and better, and I'm gonna wind a cowpoke and let them stick and bend their steak and big dick cutter.
Okay, folks, we're counting on you. Come on, Gabby, let's go.
Okay, we've got about 40 minutes of interview with Scott Sigler, so we're not going to waste too much time here. Right now is the return of Highbrow Lowbrow. Highbrow Lowbrow is like giggling when someone mentions David Helfgott, the legendary penis. Highbrow Lowbrow is like the 2004 U.S. presidential debate. And if you remember the lovely and talented Chris Fisher, who contributed a bumper to the last Deadpan, she contributed the idea for this particular flavor of Highbrow Lowbrow, and she contributed two of the three haiku. So Tim Callender says I shouldn't explain it, so we're just going to go ahead with Highbrow Lowbrow and see if you can figure it out. The moon over snow rides the night's lonely splendor. Please your girlfriend cheap. Know your enemy. Know what OEM software is. Get it today. Natural beauty grows like a blade of fine grass. Enlarge your manhood.
You are a half-breed, incomplete, powerless compared to our might. But don't worry, we are forgiving. If you come within to us again, all will be forgiven. And maybe your friends will live.
Journey to the island of Crispell and join Ashime Khandra and her clan in the fight for survival against the Weavers, where fable and blood will decide the outcome. Weaver's Web is an epic fantasy novel by New Zealand writer PJ Ballantyne. It is available now as a free serialized podcast from podiobooks.com.
You're listening to Jack Mangan's Deadpan. God, I'm so excited.
Everyone out there, I have someone that you undoubtedly know if you frequent Patio Books or if you've ever listened to audiobooks off of the internet. It's the author of Earthcore and Ancestor, and I'm going to let him do all of his plugging. It's Scott Sigler. Scott, thanks for being on the Jack Mangan's Deadpan Podcast.
Great. Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure, completely. Even though you fucking knocked me out of the number one spot at Patio Books. Now, congratulations on that. I mean, let's start there, because Earthcore just seems to be a success everywhere it goes, and that's awesome.
Thank you. It's rolling. It's got a good head of steam going right now. And there's still people who want to get out and find the patio book. And that's at patiobooks.com. And I'm driving all my traffic from my site over to there for people to hear it too.
Okay. Again, the professional podcast here, we have my dog barking in the background, but please ignore that and listen to Scott. Now, I did do the Earth Core experience, and it really, now from what I understand, and I'll be honest with you, be total disclosure, I've only done Earth Core. Now, from what I understand, everything else is in the same vein or even more extreme and even more brutal.
Yeah, it's all kind of brutal high-tech suspense. I mean, I try and describe it as, you know, Stephen King level of evisceration combined with like a Tom Clancy, Michael Crichton level of science and technology. So it's sort of eliminating all the supernatural mysticism from horror and replacing that with hard, cold science and seeing what comes out of the mix.
Okay, yeah. And you know what? Earth Core, you know, you have the advertisement, you have the cover that's dripping with blood, and, you know, the word of mouth is Earth Core is just, it's so messed up and there's so many deaths and someone such a high body count. But then I listened to it and I was like, wow, this is not just a splatter fest. This is really intelligent. There's a lot of history and a lot to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's something that people kind of latch onto. It's an easy handle to describe it. You know, somebody called me the master of splatter fiction. And but there's a whole lot going on. I mean, there's a ton of research that went into Earth Core, and it's funny because all of my work tries to find this factual bedrock upon which I can build a believable story, so that when you get to the parts that are just crazy and there's blood flying everywhere, you never give it a second thought, because as a reader, you have completely bought into the plot. It all seems believable. It all seems logical to you. But at the end of the day, some people are going to get their asses handed to them.
That's true. And you know what, Scott? This part is going to be deleted from the podcast. I got to shut my dog up. Oh, my God.
Okay. It's okay.
Oh, sorry. Maybe I'll leave that in. I mean, that's really hilarious, but but God, okay. Now, so tell me then, since I'm ignorant, sell me on, and I love Earth Core, but I'm ignorant of your other stuff. Sell me on Ancestor, and what is the name of your third book?
The new one's called Infection.
Right.
And that's the one that we are 7 weeks into, basically, when this episode launches, about 7 weeks into it. So Ancestor plays off of a very, very serious problem that science is trying to solve right now, which is the shortage of transplantable organs. You're going to see anywhere from 100 to 500,000 people on the Earth die the next calendar 12 months because there's no organs to give them. And the biggest problem is, you know, if you need a transplanted liver, if you're going to live, somebody else has got to die. And not many people are in a hurry to die. So what science is trying to do is create organ donor animals so that animals will have transplantable hearts and lungs and other organs. And they're making some work on that. But the real fear of that is, in order to do that, in order to keep the human body from rejecting these organs as alien and that your own immune system attacks it, even though it's going to kill you if it attacks it, is to put human protein DNA into those organs. And the end result is, at the end of the day, be able to take this heart out of a pig, put it in a human, it'll work fine, and the body will accept it as self. Well, one of the big fears with that is that you've got viruses that can only infect, say, a pig or a baboon that don't adapt to humans, but it's survival of the fittest down to the viral level. If you keep putting organs of another animal into a human, eventually you're going to get a virus that's going to jump species. It's going to adapt to its new environment, and there will be no natural defense in that person. And this is kind of what the big fear is with bird flu. Here's something that is, you know, this is jumping species, and if it jumps species, we're pretty much fucked because we don't have a lot of innate resistance to this. You know, your regular flus, you've got a battery of immune reactions in your body that can adapt and overcome these things. But when it's coming from a different species, it's a different ballgame. So that's the basic premise of Ancestor, that when this happens, that all the G7 governments completely shut down all of this research on people who are trying to make these transplantable animals, except one company called Genata goes underground and they go into hiding because they're almost there. And instead of trying to modify a pig or a baboon, what they have done is they have sequenced the genome of all mammals, and they have used it a big computational model to go back and find the ancestor of all mammals. And the logic being, they're going to go back 150, 200 million years, and there's not going to be any viruses in this thing because they're going to create it from scratch. They're going to use a machine to print out the DNA one protein at a time. and this is a science gone horribly wrong novel. So what they think they're going to get, a 100-pound herbivore that they'll be able to raise in large herds and have this endless supply of transplantable organs, what they actually wind up with is about a 500 to 600-pound predator with an accelerated growth genome, and it has to eat constantly in order to stay alive. And then you throw in the classic horror concept. They're in a secluded place, and they've got to fight to stay alive. And it's basically got the premise of Ancestor.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it definitely sounds like you're right. Our Earth Court sounds like it has all of the elements. You already said Michael Crichton. Sounds like you've got your Michael Crichton thing going, and your Earth Court thing. I mean, your Scott Sigler thing going, obviously.
That's right. That's right.
But you know, a lot of ass kicking and bloodletting. Built upon a foundation of really strong, well-researched science. That's what
yep.
it sounds like.
Yep. It's kind of taking two or three things going on in modern science and where people are trying to project them and then mashing them all together. What if A, B, and C happened? Could D be a result? Like with Infection, and that's a book that your listeners can still go and sign up for. It's scottsigler.podshow.com. That one's live. That one takes the concept of supernatural possession and moves it over to a hard science level where you've got microscopic organisms that invade a human body, and through the biology and through the neurotransmitters and all of the systems built into the body start to hijack a human being to make it do what they want it to do. And it's all based in super, you know, basically hard science. And the core of this is these things grow into the body and they tap into the nervous system and use a human being like a network, like an internet.
Right.
So they can send signals across your nervous system and talk to each other. Then they're tapping into the bloodstream and they're taking nutrients out of your bloodstream. So they're not vampires eating blood. They're actually using you to go out and eat, and they're parasites. And then the drawback to this is they have to flood the body with these excess of neurotransmitters in order to be able to talk. And our hero of the story, Perry Dossie, happens to be a 260-pound, 6'5" linebacker from Division I who has had rage issues all of his life and has spent his whole life trying to control his psychotic rage. So when you are flooded with serotonin and all of these other neurotransmitters, they can cause massive paranoia and they can cause psychotic behavior. So all of these things come together, and you have this guy who's fighting to keep control of his own mind, who has to act out against everything around him, because he's paranoid everyone's out to get him, because everyone actually is out to get him because of these things that have invaded him.
Right. Yeah, I was going to say, that's an interesting choice for a protagonist for a story that's so rooted in science and so rooted in based upon a scientific foundation.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things when I read a lot of science fiction, there's a lot of hard science in there, and sometimes I'm left wanting a little bit because the characters, they just don't jump off the page and say, like, that's somebody I know. And so, you know, my characters, so I'm basically doing science fiction horror, but it's all set in current day. This is your next door neighbor this is happening to. This is people you know. They're watching the same shows. Even in Ancestor, they're listening to the same podcasts. They even talk about characters listening to podcasts. And in Infection, the fans have had a lot of fun because the main character is actually doing a podcast as the book is going on. So you'll hear my rendition of the book, and then you can swing over to Perry's podcast, and you can hear how his podcasts are changing as he goes completely insane and starts killing people. So, you know, it's kind of cool. So it's really immersing, taking this hard science concept, but immersing it in our modern everyday culture. And that seems to be the formula that that keeps people enjoying it a lot.
And that's got to be one of the first novels to actually have a podcaster as its protagonist, if not the first. It's got to be.
It's got to be. You know, yeah. I've been lucky enough to have quite a few firsts since this podcasting thing came out. You know, the first one to do a podcast-only novel, T. Morris was the first one to podcast a novel from beginning to end, and Mark Jeffrey of the Pocket and Pendant was in there too. But I was the first one to have, like, you couldn't get it anywhere else.
Right.
You had to tune into the podcast, and it drove people crazy. It drove them nuts. Like, you know, I'm a 24 junkie, and every Monday at 11 o'clock, I'm pissed off that there's not more to watch. And it seems to have that same effect, that absence makes the heart grow fonder. And then that rolled into taking that archive content and selling that on iTunes, which is something that nobody had done it up to that point. And now, you know, having a main character do his own podcast. So it's kind of a unique, there's so much you can do with this new medium, and there's so many different places to take your fiction and to take your characters that there's just endless opportunity to entertain people.
Right. Like you can knock people out of the number one spot at Podiobooks.
Exactly. Exactly. You can go to Podiobooks.com and see that there's this spherical book and go, what the? I got to do something about this.
No, I'm sorry. This is not all about me. This is all about you. And I apologize for that.
Now, are you gonna do another one?
Yeah. Yeah. Spherical Tomy does leave off the cliffhanger. So there will be a sequel. But
good.
I have more stuff coming. But this is not about me. This is about you. So let's talk about Scott Sigler. So let's back up a little bit and let's talk about how you got to this point. Now, I've heard, and I can edit this out, I guess, if it's not true, or if you don't want it to go out. But I've heard that you actually haven't written anything in a while because your podcasting has kept you so busy. Is there any truth to that?
It's totally true. I have four novels finished. And that has helped me really take off as a podcast novelist, because most of the other people doing it have these great novels and they get done and they got to go back and write another one. I've been fortunate enough to have a few really solid books that that haven't been put out in any format, and now I've decided that this is the way I'm going to do things probably for the rest of my career, for the next, 100 years, however long I live, is put it out in podcast. It's free. Let people go get it and enjoy it. And then I'll start selling stuff on the back end. But because I put so much time into podcasting and so much time into promotion, the time I used to be able to spend writing is just gone. And it's a real struggle to find that time to create the one that's going to come after Infection. I mean, I've got the plot, I've got the characters, but I really got to pound the book out. The real drawback for me is I'm a rewrite guy. I'm not one of those people who sits down and cranks out a novel and gets done and goes, mwah, magnifique, it's perfect. You know, I mean, I read it and I go, this is a giant pile of stinky rhino shit, and this is just not going to cut it. And then I think about killing myself because I have no talent, and then it's a whole drama that I go through that my wife, unfortunately, has to bear the brunt of. And then I rewrite and I rewrite and I rewrite. And, like Earth Corps took 2 years to write. So
wow.
It's going to take a little while. So, but it does get in the way. And then I'm trying to do a lot of other projects too. And trying to, and then, working the day job too. I mean, all that stuff comes into play. So I'm thinking about I'm just going to tune out of society here in a couple of weeks. I'm going to call in and say I've been kidnapped, and I'm just going to take my little laptop and go hide somewhere and just write like crazy.
Yeah, and it'll be great in the first draft.
Yeah, yeah,
actually,
exactly.
You know what? I've talked to those guys, and those guys aren't published at all. Those guys who have a first draft that they love and think is perfect. Those guys aren't published. So
no.
I think you're doing it right.
Yeah.
And obviously you're doing it right. I mean, the reaction to Earth Corps is astounding. And I guess we can say this now, since Earth Corps is an absolute success, and so are the Ancestor and Infection are following suit. Now, you did have trouble getting Earth Corps published traditionally, right? I mean, that's...
Yeah, totally. The biggest problem that I and a lot of other authors have is unless you write a mystery novel, unless you write a romance novel or a far future hard sci-fi, publishers are scared shitless of you because they don't think they can sell you because they don't know where to put you on the shelves. It's so much harder to put in some kind of cross-genre book. And one of my readers described my work as genre whiplash, because you think you're getting one thing and you get a total another thing. So, I mean, there's science fiction, there's horror, there's suspense, there's action. There are all of these things tied together. And the publishers just, their constant reaction was that we just don't know what to do with this. So, that it was very difficult to get Earth Corps published. And I finally managed to get it through to Time Warner. And Time Warner was going to go with it. And the imprint it was on actually got shut down shortly after 9/11. Basically, April 2002, Earth Corps was supposed to be on every bookshelf in the country, and then that imprint got shut down along with a lot of other Time Warner subsidiaries. Wow. Then the book just languished for a couple of years because it was tied up. It was still a contract, even though they weren't going to do anything with it. And then we got that back and, got done feeling sorry for myself and started figuring out what to do with it. And that's about when, March 2005 is when I found podcasting. And just, kind of crap my pants to be like, wow, I searched for podcast novel and I couldn't find anything. And it took me a couple of weeks before I realized I couldn't find anything because nobody had done it yet. And now we all look on it and it's so obvious. And it was so obvious to me at the time. I figured everybody would be doing this. It turns out there were only three people in the whole world who were doing it, and fortunately I was able to get off to a good start with it. So now Earth Core has been picked up by Dragon Moon Press. You know, we had 10,000 people listen to the finale, and now the numbers are somewhere close to 25,000 people have listened to it. And Ancestor finished up with 18,000 listeners for the final episode, so it's going pretty good. And Infection, I don't know where that's going to wind up, but we're working pretty hard on it.
And now you mentioned a fourth. Now, actually, just to confirm, so between 2002 and 2005, that's when you were writing the other three, so that you said you have four completed novels.
Correct. Okay.
And so what's the fourth one the next podcast?
The fourth one, I'm not sure. The fourth one is a really strange – it's genre whiplash even for me when I look at it and go, well, I'm not sure how to put this one out there. And now it's really funny because you read about all these stories about authors and pigeonholing themselves or getting in one category, and you go, oh, that's a nice problem to have. And now I'm coming up on my fourth book, and, like, I have that problem. I have, you know – thousands of people who are expecting a certain type of story. And if I'm going to go off in this, and this is more of a far-flung space sci-fi type novel, and it's still got that Scott Sigler element. You know, there's a lot of foul-mouthed ne'er-do-wells in this book, people backstabbing each other, and there's, you know, the usual amount of blood and gore, but it's definitely more out in a hard sci-fi world. It's more space opera type of a thing. So it's a tough decision. Do I put that out and let my fans see if they dig that, or do I finish up the book I'm working on now, which is called Nocturnal, which is, you know, I mean, you could put Earth Core, Ancestor, Infection, and Nocturnal on a shelf in the same spot in the bookstore, and people would buy all four because it's the same style of story they're used to. So Nocturnal is starting to look at hard science. What's the problems in this particular theory? What if A, B, and C happen? And Nocturnal is a horror story based on the theory of punctuated equilibrium, and it starts to get into some of my own evolutionary theories. Like, I'm totally into evolution, but there's some problems with the theory, and, you know, instinct is one of the things that gets you into a quandary. You know, is instinct actually developed by many random mutations in behavior, which I find almost mathematically impossible? Or is there more of a Lamarckian element going on where something figures out a particular behavior, and then because we're pre-programmed with memories, all of our instincts are pre-programmed in our DNA. So something has to code for behaviors in our DNA. There's some kind of chemical combo in there saying, you know, we're going to produce these chemicals and it's going to make you have this behavior and have this reaction and have this instinct. And Nocturnal is sort of based on the concept that not only can we imprint memories onto our DNA, which then become instincts, but possibly it's even possible to have some effect over the genome, to have some conscious effect over your own genome that can imprint on the germline layer, and then your progeny are going to be able to carry on a particular thing that you have come up with or modified or invented. And it's a real simplistic approach to the story, but so Nocturnal is the same thing that people are used to. It's this crazy science concept. There are monsters involved, go figure, and there's the you know, my prerequisite. I hit my quota of decapitations and murders, so it's a good book.
Okay. Well, you know, what's interesting about this is an interesting premise, and I've actually heard it argued that since an instinct is defined as a rigid action that you always take, you know, no matter what, in every situation, I've heard it argued that humans are actually without instinct. So that's kind of an interesting take on that.
You know, we are and we aren't, though, because you've got to start getting into where's the definition between a physical reaction and an instinct. You know, if it's too hot facing one way and you got to get away from that heat, you know, is that just a physical reaction, or does your physical reaction start to combine with your intellect to say, to figure out a direction to go? And we're not free of instinct. I mean, the urge to reproduce is fairly consistent in human beings. I mean, there are statistical anomalies, but it's pretty consistent. And violence is incredibly instinctual, and so is tribal bonding is incredibly instinctual. I mean, our basic elements of racism and a subdivision of cultural elements, even within America, all goes back to a basic instinctual reaction, which is, if it's different from me, then I'm not going to trust it, because at some point along the lines of species, we figured out what is like us and what is going to move us forward as a group. and what is not like us, and then we have to take those resources away from what is not like us. So I, you know, personally, I don't have a lot of hope that we're ever going to conquer racism, because we keep finding new things to divide ourselves on, whether it move from the color of your skin, it starts to move into what city are you from, what block are you from, what religion are you, things that have absolutely nothing to do with our genome. We keep inventing ways to do that. So that's an instinct to me. That's an instinctive reaction that we have. So I don't know if I'd agree that humans are without instinct.
Okay. And it is true. I mean, this blue state, red state stuff is fairly new. You know, I mean, I know the Republican versus Democrat goes way back, mm-hmm. but I think it's really become polarized. So I think maybe it's a pessimistic way to look at it, but you're really right. I mean, we do invent things to just be to separate us all constantly. We've never stopped.
So. Right. And that's sort of what it's those scientific concepts that I try and put into my stories. There's no happy sunshine, you know, happy right off into the sunset at the end of the story. There's no Star Trek solution. We're going to reconfigure the deflector shield and we're going to solve this problem. You know,
right.
It's like, there are some big motherfucking problems going on out there. And, you know, and liberals don't want to hear this, but there aren't solutions a lot of times. There are just, here's a problem. That's the way it is. And this is part and parcel of life. And it's going to be with us for the next 4 or 5 millennia. It's just the way things are. So I sort of reflect that in a lot of my stories. Every time we make an advance, there's something else that can happen. It sort of balances the scales to some extent. And, you know, with everything, there are problems. And in my stories, those problems rear their head and there's no easy solution.
I mean, of course, in Earth Core, the problem is not a likely one. I guess it's not likely that...
No.
But, and I guess we won't give it away in case any of my listeners haven't started listening yet, though they should listen to Earth Core. I mean, what the fuck? Go out and listen to it. But there's definitely that element. I mean, the approach of all the characters and the science and everything, it right. I mean, there's a real logic to Earth Core, which I have no doubt is gonna. If we'll find the same things in Ancestor and Infection, but I guess what I'm trying to direct to is the characters in Earth Core follow the way you built those characters. It seems like you use the same logical approach, is that the characters are just so believable. And you mentioned this earlier, that you wanted the characters to be like, you know, I know this guy, this is my neighbor. I mean, your voices were really good, which really helped a lot, coming from a guy who's terrible with voices. But your mm-hmm. voices were very good. But the characters themselves, I mean, if you're just reading the print version of Earthcore, they're all very, very believable.
Thanks.
I mean, your old prospector, I mean, he's a very believable guy. It's like, yeah, I've met this guy. And same with Connor Kirkland and everyone. It's like, yes, I've met this person. And that's a real accomplishment as an author to get that done.
Thank you. Thank you. Those characters were fun. And when I started to kill them off, it was really hard to do. You know, you're like, but sorry, buddy, your time's up. And and that's kind of where I draw my line in the sand with the stories. Is like Robin Cook. I've read a couple Robin Cook novels, and the same four people live every time. And when they're locked in the freezer and the house is on fire and the bubonic plague is in a vial that's about to drop onto the floor, you're not stressed out. You're not worried about it at all, because you're like, oh, they're going to pull their way out of this. This isn't going to be an issue at all, you know? And when you get into Earth Core, they wind up in that same situation, but they die. And so it's really lifting a page from Stephen King, is a big influence. And you know, the thing with him, the magic about him is you don't know from one paragraph to the next if people are going to die or not. He'll spend 100 pages investing you in this character, every aspect of this character's life, and you turn the page and they're dead. And which kind of ticks you off, because everybody's busy. You're like, I didn't have 100 pages to waste, guy. But the thing is, when those people get into those dramatic situations and when they are locked in the house and the monster's outside, you don't know if they're going to live. And that's what puts people on the edge of their seat. And I think that once you get into that finale of Earth Core, that's what really had people hooked, because they know people are going to go. They don't know who. In every dangerous situation, they can't stop turning the page because they don't know what's going to happen. And that's the magic of what I do, is like, you don't know who's going to make it.
Okay, in this very brief break, as you can tell by the music, we're going to do a quick stolen rap line. This one's going out by special request to my main man, Alvy. And it's a line from the pre-Baby Got Back Sir Mix-a-Lot classic, My Posse's on Broadway. And I'm not going to sing the chorus, so don't even worry about that. Because the 808 kick drum makes the girlies get dumb. We're rolling Rainier, and the jealous want to get some. Every time we do this, sucker MCs want to battle on the man they love to hate, the J.R. Ewing of Seattle. I'm getting better at this. Jay-Z, watch out.
Hello, my name is Jimmy. I live in Denver. You are listening to Jackie Magnum's Deadpan Podcast. I like him. He makes me giggle.
Now, you do have some of these characters, the few survivors. You do have a few characters in a couple of the other books, right? There are some that some of your books are linked, right? Is that correct?
Yeah, some of them are linked. Some of the bit parts are linked right now. One of the characters that, through his own conceit in Ancestor and position of power in the FBI and ordering people around, and, you know, this is what I found with people in power. They tend to order people around and just conceitedly think they know what they're talking about when they really don't, and they don't stop to listen. And what this guy makes the characters do sets off this whole chain of events that screws everything up. And then you get into Infection, and it's the same guy, and he's doing the exact same thing, except he's not the one who's going to be left holding the bag at the end of the day. He's pulling the strings from far away, and then there go my dogs. He's
Your dog must have seen mine. That must have been.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. So
I'm trying to make the characters continue through the books. The survivors of Earthcore are going to make it into Mount Fitzroy, the sequel to Earthcore, which I'm going to get done in 2007. And I just think it's more fun when you bring all those characters in. And a lot of those stories where somebody's a bit character in book A and they become a major character in book B, that's great. I mean, I really like that stuff.
Now, you've got these novels. Now, what about short fiction? Have you ever tried the short fiction thing, or will you ever try the short fiction thing?
Yeah, I've done a bunch of short fiction, and I kind of gave up on. At one point, I was doing a short story a week, and then I was trying to run it through all the different publication outlets. And eventually, I kind of gave up on that because I'm realizing that short stories serve a purpose and develop an audience and help get you some representation. But at the end of the day, it's not a novel, and a novel is kind of where the money's at, so to speak. You know, if you can sell the novel, then you can make a living as a writer. But I still have tons of ideas for short fiction, and I write them. I had one out on Escape Pod a while ago, a story called Hero, and then I've got a few more that I've got lined up. So when I'm done with Infection and I'm trying to buy time to finish Nocturnal, that's when I'll be putting out a few short stories.
Okay.
But I really like the format. Unfortunately, as I'm so long-winded, most of my short stories want to turn themselves into novellas. And there's just not a lot of markets out there for short stories anymore. So, I mean, the goal here is to develop this fiction writing into the full-time career. And so I'm trying to stick with the novels to get those developed.
And I guess that leads pretty well into what else, since, you know, you've obviously thought outside the box and done some interesting stuff to promote your books, which happen to be able to back it up. You know, they're not just crappy books that you promoted well. There's just a lot of great stuff to them, which is the key to any success. But what I'm trying to get at is, what else do you have in mind for your books? Are you pitching to Hollywood? Or are you pitching to any other kind of media?
Earthcore was great because I picked up a couple of people who basically emailed me and said, I want to be part of this. I want to help with this. And one of the gentlemen's name is Jeff Sass, and we actually had a full Earthcore series Bible, which he helped me develop. We got that into the Sci-Fi Channel, and it made it up to the VP of original programming at USA, who liked it but passed on it. But, you know, that's reaching a level that I haven't reached before, so I considered that to be a very positive thing. And we're kicking it all over Hollywood right now. We're trying to figure out who we can get on board to make it a series, because I've developed Earthcore into a 24 episode hour long series. So it's going to be dramatic. It's going to have cliffhangers, and things are going to change a little bit. And then we're also trying to push Ancestor to the Sci-Fi Channel as more of a creature feature. And then there's some original screenplays that I'm working on that I'm finished that we're starting to shop around as well. So the podcasting has really kicked things off and gotten a little bit of brand name recognition. And now I'm trying to use Earthcore to continue to build that brand. I mean, Earthcore is getting in front of people who make decisions now, and they probably will pass on it, but it's setting the stage for the next level. So it's just a big building building block process that I don't think we'll see the results of for 3 to 5 years. And I really think that the podcasting itself, you know, there's, for somebody in this podcast novel field, there's going to be one of those quote unquote overnight successes that's going to catch all of media by surprise when, you know, Jack Mangan puts out a book in 4 years and it makes it to the bookshelves. And all of a sudden, you know, there's 80,000 people who've heard his name and have seen him and go, oh, I'll buy that. And it's going to just, something's going to blow up for someone. And the regular media is just not going to understand what the heck's happening. You know, obviously I'm hoping that that happens with one of my books, but I think it's going to happen to a couple, it's going to happen to a couple of people, because with this podcast novel thing, it's, A, people can consume your work for free and see if they like it. There's zero risk. There's no other way to do that in the world. Even if you're going to go to the bookstore and read the books, you still have to get in your car, get in your mass transit, go to that place, spend the time to get that done. It's not like you're in front of your computer anyways. Just download the thing, throw it on your MP3 player, and listen to it. And the other part of that is you have immediately have a global market to deal with. I get emails from China. I get tons of emails from Australia, England, France, Denmark. I mean, there's people all over the world who know who I am and are fans of my work and want more, and yet I've never been there. I've never had a book in their stores. There isn't a publisher in France who has any clue who I am. There isn't a publisher anywhere who has any clue who I am. Let's be honest with ourselves. They just don't. They don't get this new concept, and the ones who do get it are pissing in their pants because it's going to ruin their whole business model.
Yeah, I mean, I talked to at Ice Escape. I mean, people seemed, you know, T. Morris and I actually both talked to a really powerful publisher, and that person was really excited about podcasting. So I think you're more right maybe than you even realize. Is I think that this is, you know, this is the future, at least in some ways. This is absolutely the future.
Well, it sure as hell isn't the present right now, because I mean, you look at the numbers. If somebody puts out a book and it sells 5,000 copies for a first time novelist, everybody's it's party time. That's great. Everybody loves it. Wonderful. This guy has potential. Let's put some money into him. Let's really push him for book number two, or let's continue to push book number one. That's sort of a bellwether. You know, the 3 to 5,000 copies is good. And now you've got something like Ancestor, which is out, and it's had 20,000 people listen to it. You know, you're four times what it takes to be considered success as a first-time novelist, and the publishers don't understand the numbers at all. When we pitch those numbers to publishers, like, ah, yeah, I don't know about this. I don't get this. What is podcasting? They don't get it. It's really strange. We're in an early phase where nobody gets it yet, that you've got someone with a product that it's easy to assume 50 to 100,000 people know the name. Even if they hadn't read the whole book, they're familiar with the name. You have brand name recognition, which is something that's almost impossible to get for a first-time fiction novelist. You just can't get it.
Right.
So, they, you know, the fact that literally that they're not kicking in my door fighting over these books really kind of shows you that the fiction world lives in a different paradigm than the nonfiction world. Because if I had written, you know, the 15 easy steps to slim down your big fat ass, and that had moved 20, 30,000 copies or 30,000 subscribers in podcasts, there would be someone mailing me a check right now, because nonfiction gets the concept of brand name exposure, immediacy, and numbers. They understand that if something's a story, you got to move, you got to move quick. Fiction doesn't get that yet.
Well, let's collaborate on that then. I'm out. How to slim your fat ass. Yeah, let's do it.
Well, there's one guy who's got a great podcast going, and it's his something to do with the number 30. He's trying to lose 30 pounds in 30 days. I can't quite remember the name of it, and it makes for horrible interview material. But, you know, his book, his podcast, I think has something like 30, 35,000 people subscribed to it. And, you know, I've never heard of this guy, and I'm looking at his numbers going, are you kidding me? But it's diet-related, and if there's a nonfiction publisher out there, you know, somebody's going to go, somebody hears about that, they're going to be on this guy immediately and be like, write a book, let's go to market.
Yeah.
That's the nonfiction paradigm. Write the damn book, let's go to market. You know, and fiction is just, they don't live in that world.
Well, I think that's going to change. I think you're absolutely right. I think you're dead on. But I can't see that. The way that the numbers, not to be modest about myself, and definitely not about you, the numbers we're putting up, I think it's going to have, something's got to give, I guess, is the only way to put it. And now you said something about 5 minutes ago that I thought was really interesting, about, now you've tuned your stuff for TV and for movies so that if James Cameron says, hey, you know what, I want to do Earthcore, you've got something written for him already.
Correct.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And the books themselves are written from that perspective. I mean, I'm a huge movie fan. and, you know, like James Cameron is the man. And I try and write the book like he would shoot the movie, which is one of the things that's one of the comments I really, a lot of people get that about their books. A lot of my people, fans say that about the book. They're like, wow, I could sort of see the movie in my head. And that's the pacing that I'm trying to set up for these things. So, I mean, everything is aimed at that end result, which is to have somebody buy the book rights, James Cameron directs it, Stan Winston does the special effects, and I get really drunk.
Well, you know, James Cameron contacted me about EarthCore, but I told him you wouldn't be interested.
Ah, crap. You see, wrong place, wrong time.
Yeah, sorry about that.
That's all right.
Now, you know what, this has been great. But now let's talk a little bit about, I mean, we talked a lot about your books and stuff. Let's kind of spend the last 5 minutes talking about Scott Sigler. Tell us about, you know, kind of where you came from and how you ended up being a novelist.
Well, I've been writing literally as long as I can remember. I wrote my first monster story in the third grade. It was a humdinger called Tentacles. And of course,
really?
It was a monster. Yes, it was a monster story. And I mean, one of the most pivotal moments in my life was when I was a little kid, my dad took me to see King Kong.
Okay.
And that was one of the first movies I got to go to. And I saw Star Wars and I loved that. And I thought it was great. But I saw King Kong and the parts of the movie where I wasn't hiding in my dad's armpit because I was terrified. I was looking at the screen, looking at this giant monster, and I was going, this is what I want to do. I want to tell stories like this. I want to see people in a movie theater screaming and thoroughly entertained and completely forgetting about everything except, you know, what I'm putting in front of them. So I've been playing with fiction, and I wrote a lot and was good at it. So I went into journalism because I was exceptionally lazy, and I was like, well, I can write in my sleep. This is going to be a no-brainer. So I, you know, did the journalism thing, and it was like cheating. College was no big deal because all I was doing was writing, and then went into the newspaper field for 3 years and just absolutely hated it, hated the kind of person you have to be successful in that field. And reporters are not so much these days. I mean, the state of American journalism is just shit, but reporters are really – they really have been the glue that has held our society together for a long time. And what they do is just vital to democracy. And it just, sure. I couldn't pull that off. I could not be that kind of jaded, intrusive person that just didn't care about people. So I got out of there and was fortunate enough to get into a software company that made software for newspapers. So I got into customer support there, which you can read about my view on customer support and infection because the main character is a customer support rep. And eventually got into marketing and then found that I had to get back into the writing bug. So I've been writing seriously for about 10 years. And infection and EarthCore was the first big project in that.
Okay. And how do you balance it with personal life?
It's exceptionally difficult because especially in the modern day when, you know, your work schedule, nobody works 9 to 5, you know, home life and work life are synonymous. You're always called out on something or other. And I'm a creature of habit. Like when I was working that support job, I was getting up at 7 a.m. I was in my desk by 8. I would write from 8 to 11 and I would work from noon to 8. And that was day in and day out for 2 years. And I was just producing massive amounts of copy because, I mean, I would literally hit the desk and be rolling 5 minutes into it. Whereas now I write when I catch as catch can, and it can take me 30, 45 minutes to get into that groove where you don't really realize you're doing it. You're just doing it. So now it's just, it's really trying to look at the schedule and figure out when can I sit down and write. And it's difficult. I'm having a real tough time finding that time to sit down and create.
Yeah, I hear you, brother. I mean, I know exactly what you mean. But I mean, it seems like you're driven and you're doing well. So, I mean, just keep doing your thing. And I have no doubt that you're going to go right through the ceiling.
Thanks.
So my last question then, and I'm trying to make a stock question for my podcast here when I interview people.
Okay.
I don't know if I'm going to actually succeed, but, since I have your attention here, let's talk about, one of your, guilty pleasures.
Guilty pleasure has got to be the Detroit Lions because it was only this year I came to the conclusion that they're never going to win and they're always going to be dismal. And I am going to be glued to the TV every Sunday and having my heart torn out Sunday after Sunday after Sunday and screaming at the TV and sitting there listening to people ask me, why do you root for them? And the answer is, I don't know. I just always have rooted for them. So that's got to be I don't know if you'd call that a guilty pleasure, maybe a retard pleasure. You know, I associated with that, I like to hit myself in the head with a baseball bat a lot. So those two things are sort of related.
Well, I'm a Jets fan, so actually our guilty pleasure is kind of...
Yeah, I hear you, brother. Talk to me.
Yeah, really. So, I mean, our guilty pleasures could almost collide, you know.
Yep, yep.
So when they play, I mean, one of us has got to give. You know, either the Jets or the Lions are going to win. Actually, they'll tie at like -3 will be the score, the final score of the game.
I'm pretty sure we'll find a way to screw that one up, so...
Yeah. So... Scott, it's been a huge pleasure. Thank you for coming on the show. Best of luck with all of your stuff, all of your books. And you have carte blanche. You can come back on my show whenever you want. Promote your shit with me whenever you want.
We'll tell everybody to go to scottsigler.podshow.com to get the free podcast. And there's also more stuff over at scottsigler.net. And I've always got something to sell, so come on by.
All right. And don't forget, you forgot the most important one. www.patiobooks.com.
Of course, patiobooks.com. That's the place to go. No, patiobooks.com is going to shake a lot of shit up. I mean, they've really got things figured out over there, and that's going to be one of those 2-year slow burn things, but probably sometime around 2008 that's going to be a really big friggin' deal.
Yeah, I mean, I have 100% faith in the guys running it, in Evo and Evo Terra and T Morris and, you know, Chris Miller. I just have They really know what they're doing. So, yeah.
Yeah.
And you've seen a lot of success there and really everywhere you've been. And so more power to you and good luck.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Thank you, Scott. Okay. We're at 46 minutes, so we're done. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Alvy, Jimmy, Chris Fisher, and Scott Sigler. Thank you very, very much to Austin and Martha for your donations. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And I'm only reading your first names here, but if you want to be 100% anonymous, then let me know. I'll edit it out. The beauty of podcasting. Okay, you heard Candles 2 in a previous episode. Now we're going to leave off with a short instrumental piece called Candles. Okay, before the music, one more thing really quick. Check out Spherical Tomy at patiobooks.com. Okay, one more thing really quick. You heard how one awesome listener contributed to this week's Highbrow Lowbrow, and how awesome listeners requested the stolen rap hip-hop lines for this episode and last one. We'll certainly keep that up, everyone, but check it out. In 2 weeks, I'm going to run an interview-free show, filled with nothing but your contributions, plus my usual crap. So if you're able to record, and you feel inclined, then send me yourself reading favorite rap hip-hop lines, your own dumbass memories, and or your own highbrow-lowbrow material. You know, search engine comparisons of fancy words versus naughty words, mixes of classic lit with redneck song lyrics, that sort of thing. If you're not able to record but you still want to play, then send me an email, jack@jackmangan.com. Maybe we can figure something out, especially if you happen to have Skype. Okay, this is the longest deadpan episode yet. Enjoy my original song, Candles. And yes, spherical heads, you did hear this at times during the Spherical Tomy Patio Book. Thanks for listening to the Jack Mangan Deadpan Podcast. Until next week, keep one foot in the gutter and one fist in the gold, whatever the hell that means.